out of the box to lock in that notion of the best guest list around, we welcome back Michael Hurley from WBZ, CBS Boston. Hello, Michael.
Hello, that's right. That's absolutely right.
I hate to pull you away from this baseball game that I think as soon as they finish, they're sending the whole tape to Cooperstown. It's one of the greatest ever.
Yeah, I apologize if I sound like I just woke up, but this game is in hour number, it's entering hour number five? I'm not good at counting, but that's a few too many hours of Detroit Tigers, Boston Red Sox baseball. But what are you going to do? You know, you can't time baseball.
It's getaway day, as they say, and gosh, who knows what happens on those days.
I mean, they're not in any rush to get away. I will say that. These games go in about 2 hours and 20 minutes. They're swinging at everything. They're in. This is not quite the same. We're getting eighth inning box. We're getting dueling errors in the same inning. It's just fascinating stuff.
Well, what's more embarrassing than really bad baseball on a Thursday afternoon? I would say anything the NHL does. Let me see if I understand this. If I want to get a small fine, yeah, I can just attack people on the ice. If I want a big fine, then I would say the way to go about it would be to criticize the office of discipline and lack thereof at the league level.
Yeah, I mean, none of this is surprising with what's going on with the NHL this week. They are perpetually at the kids' table of North American sports leagues, to put it politely. And this week just shows how just embarrassing is the only word, because, I mean, we know and we have known for years, for going back to Mark Savard in 2010, how bad the NHL is at protecting players, at actually caring about the safety of health and well-being of the players that make the league. So that part is no surprise. It's just the Rangers were left to do something because the league was not helping them out. So they, you know, released a statement, and we learned words hurt a lot more than Tom Wilson's punches to the tune of $250,000 fine for simply not being nice, which might be sports history. I'm not sure. It feels like sports history. but, I mean, to me, the biggest thing that came out this week was that apparently George Parros, the disciplinary chair there, didn't even want to suspend Tom Wilson for hitting Brandon Carlo in the head in March, and then Gary Bettman had to step in and overrule him. Gary Bettman essentially saying that George Parros is unfit for the role. The Rangers said it this week, and now they're paying $250,000. So, yes, a very NHL week if there ever was.
And then last night, the craziness of, I guess, a return to the old West there. Drop the puck, drop the gloves, and let's go and see how many guys we can get in the penalty box in the first 4 minutes of the game.
Yeah, and it made for great theater, obviously. I mean, we all tune in to a certain degree and expect and sort of see the mayhem and the chaos, but really it doesn't change anything or do anything. It doesn't provide any justice, and honestly, nobody on the Rangers is even capable of fighting very well. So the whole thing was kind of a waste of time. It was silly and it was entertaining, but it's just the league created that situation for no reason when a guy with a long rap sheet of just assaulting players snapped. I mean, you saw what happened one night, and the guy snapped. He was in a different planet, just throwing heads around and doing things unprovoked and going crazy. So the league decided that was okay, and then they got what they got. And then if you look, I tweeted this out, if you look at the NHL's official highlights from last night, there were no fights. It was just a nice, clean hockey game. A nice cap to the eight games played between the Rangers and Capitals this season. So very nice. Very, very good job.
We're talking with Michael Hurley here on Downtown. Well, can any of this disarray with the Rangers help the Bruins tonight?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. The Rangers have to be completely depleted energy-wise, emotion-wise, even talent-wise, with Pavel Buchnevich getting suspended for tonight for having to fend for himself last night and going a little bit overboard. So you got to think, with what the Rangers have been through this week, the last thing they wanted to do was hop on a plane, come to Boston, and face the Bruins for their second game in two nights. So I would like to think that this is as easy of a victory for the Bruins. Not that it really matters. You're just talking about seeding at this point, and you can't control what the other teams do, so it doesn't even really matter. Larger picture. But in terms of just getting through tonight, I would think there would be a small amount of resistance from a Rangers team that has to be emotionally and physically kind of spent right now.
Everybody up here in Black Bear Country is awfully excited about the way Jeremy Swayman's NHL career has started. After the performance by Halak the other night, do you think it's a given now that it'll be Rask and Swayman in the postseason?
I do think that, and it goes back to before, you know, most of us down here had even ever heard of Swayman, with all due respect to the Black Bears. Those of us who haven't followed them as closely in recent years really hadn't heard this kid's name at all. So even before that, Halak hadn't exactly been, you know, shining this year. So to have a kid come in, and I think Swayman is the story of this Bruins season because he's helped them so much this year. I think he's won 8 games, if I'm not mistaken. So you're talking about significant points in the standings that if you got backup play from, you know, standard backup play from someone that hadn't excelled like he had, six wins, so 12 points in the standings. But he's been immense this year in a period where they lost both of their NHL goalies. But then, you know, longer term, both Rask and Halak are up at the end of the year. And who knows what's going to happen with either one. I'm not saying Swayman's ready to step in and be number one guy for a cup-contending team, but if they do re-sign Rask, if Rask does come back, say, on a 2 or 3 year deal, I think Swayman can easily slide into that role of the 1A, you know, the 20 to 25 starts, because I don't think this is flukish. I don't think it's lightning in a bottle type thing. He's a solid goaltender with a solid head on his shoulders who's really just impressed out of, like, I mean, he's going to come down to earth at some point, but I still think that makes him a capable NHL goalie. So to me, what Swayman's done already is the story of the year for the Bruins season. Now, having said that, if he goes and loses to the Rangers tonight, maybe we have a different conversation, but I don't see that happening.
Let's switch gears and talk Patriots. With the draft last week, it's tough to grade these things out until, well, people actually play in the National Football League. But who would you guess might be the draft pick that makes the most impact in the coming season?
I think I'm not the only one to say it. Certainly, it's kind of a common theme that the Christian Barmore pick at 38 was kind of the Patriots pick, you know, where they moved up. It's early in the second round and no defensive tackles have been taken yet. And Bill Belichick, you know, you could imagine how excited he was getting just at the thought of moving up to get the first defensive tackle off the board that late in the draft. So to me, he's a player that he'll be good, and that position is set up to be a lot better than it was last year with the moves that they've made with Godshaw, with Anderson, bringing back Lawrence Guy. Among the many things that looked out of place last year for the Patriots was them just getting run all over. I mean, remember that Rams game on the Thursday night? Mm. It was almost embarrassing. They couldn't get off the field. So to me, beefing up that interior, that has never been a need for Belichick before. He's always had a solid interior defensive line. So Barmore, I think, is going to be part of a larger group that's super noticeable, an improvement from last year to this year.
Do we know anything more about the quarterback's decision than we knew before the draft?
I honestly think it's a pretty good setup. I think I'm the only person in New England who thinks Cam Newton can be all right with a much improved.
No, I do too.
Okay, so me and you.
Yeah. And frankly, look, with more time to have real practice and get used to being around other guys.
Yeah, and for sure, I mean, that was a factor, and I know people, like, hang on the COVID thing and things like that, which are, to me is less than just the talent he was playing with. Tom Brady in 2019 didn't look great with that same cast around him, and people said he was done and washed up and all done, and then the next year he throws 40 touchdowns and wins the Super Bowl. So I don't think Cam Newton is ready for that jump because he's not Tom Brady, but given the improvements they made, guys that can get themselves open, guys that can draw double teams, whether it's Henry or Smith, things are going to open up, and Cam Newton is going to be better. So I think in terms of a situation, I don't think Mac Jones will be your week one, day one starter. I don't think he's physically ready for that based on the shirtless picture we've seen going around the internet ever since he was drafted. I think the young man needs to lift some weights and get in shape, and I think he's in a good situation to learn. Granted, the offense he will run will not resemble anything like the one Cam Newton will run, but I think easing him in is probably the way to go. And if Cam plays great, then the Patriots are in a good shape. If Cam plays poorly, then maybe Mac Jones steps up and gets, you know, live reps. But I think it's not a day one situation for Mac Jones either way.
was he the guy they wanted all along, or were they just unwilling to deal to get a Justin Fields or somebody like that?
In the draft?
Yeah.
I think, yes, realistically. Overall, I still think Bill Belichick wanted Jimmy Garoppolo. I think there's something to the connection having drafted him. And to me, the biggest thing ever was, you know, when the feature came out where Jimmy Garoppolo said that Bill Belichick texted him after games, which to me still stands. I mean, you can't say anything more than that. To get Bill Belichick to take his phone out and send a text message, you know, of his own volition, you know, just a friendly chat, like, hey, nice job. I'm not sure anyone else can say that. So I think there was something to it. I think if Mac Jones was off the board by the time 15 came, I think the backup plan was just to go and get Jimmy. I think they would have been fine with that. So in the draft, I do think Mac Jones, you know, fits what they want to do. And we've seen, you know, I expected more out of Cam Newton last year because I expected more out of Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick, and it just never came. So maybe a running quarterback who can throw is not necessarily what they were looking for. So in that sense, maybe he was their top pick, but I still think, you know, down here everyone's making a big deal out of Belichick kind of looking sad and bummed out in the video, the war room video. I think it was because reality had set in that James Richard Garoppolo was not coming to town.
I need to back up a little bit. You mean to tell me that never once did Belichick text you and say, yo, Mike, nice work on the Deflategate coverage?
Not a single time. It was implied, I think, as I showed up at the press conference. It's just sort of like a wink and a nod, like, you nailed it, buddy. Like, that. There's the good stuff.
Well, and probably didn't want to leave any kind of a trail.
Exactly. It was a sensitive subject around there. We don't talk about it in the building, you know?
I understand completely. Michael Hurley, WBZ, CBS Boston. You'll be happy to know the Red Sox have scored two off that vaunted Tiger bullpen to regain the lead 10-9. This one should be over by 11.
The crowd is sitting quietly, impatiently. They're waiting for it to end. You know, they got the result they wanted. They're three outs away from going home happy.
Dreams do come true. Michael, thank you, as always, for visiting with us. We'll do it again soon.
Absolutely. That was a little bit exhilarating. I don't know if we, you know, got express written consent from Major League Baseball on that one. So I think that was as dangerous as I'm going to get this week. So yeah. I appreciate it.
It was edgy. That's why we like it. Thank you, Michael.
Have a good one.
Michael Hurley with us on Downtown.